From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Director Stephen Frears says he makes different kinds of films on this side of the Atlantic and in his native England. Here, he directed The Grifters, High Fidelity, Accidental Hero, pretty commercial fare. Over there, his breakthrough film was My Beautiful Laundrette. That movie put inner-city Asians on screen in a way they'd never been before. It also put the then-unknown actor Daniel Day-Lewis on screen. Frears' new film also puts a previously invisible group in the movies. It's a murder melodrama called Dirty Pretty Things.
What's this, lunch?
It was blocking the lavatory in room 510.
It is a hat, a human hat.
What? Perhaps you should telephone the police.
You think I should call the police?
Senor Juan, someone is dead.
Okay, you speak to them. You found it, you do the talking. I will introduce you. What's your full name, Okwe? And you never told me where you're from, or even how come you're here in this beautiful country. Hello, police? Yeah, got somebody wants to talk to you.
Stephen Frears' Dirty Pretty Things is set among the new class of London service workers, migrants from Asia, Africa, Eastern Europe.
It's a very modern film. It's very much what London has become like in the last 10 years. I mean, all this business of a huge sort of migrant culture, that's really come about in the last 10 years. And it's nothing to do with the Empire or, you know, the people who were in My Beautiful Laundrette. This is to do with Russians and Turks and Albanians and people from all over the world sort of moving across Europe and needing to find jobs to survive and ending up as a sort of, in London, as a kind of underclass in which crime and therefore the material for a thriller flourishes.
Your characters work at a hotel. They're the staff of the hotel.
Yes.
This would be the kind of place where we would find this new migrant class.
Yes, absolutely. They make the beds and they clean it and they do the dirty work that English people won't do. And they do the same in hospitals and they drive cabs and they, whatever dirty work there is to be done, they do it.
And it's rare to see a movie about them. this is something new that you've done.
Yes, but of course what I like about it is that on top of that is a sort of melodrama, is the subject of a thriller. So it's not presented as a tragic social issue.
The actress who plays the Turkish chambermaid will be recognizable to people who saw the movie Amelie, Audrey Tautou. It seems to be very big. I mean, suddenly
she's great. She's brilliant.
Is she absolutely fluent in English?
No. She speaks English like a schoolgirl. I mean, three of the people in the film really didn't speak English.
So you're directing this French actress who's playing the part of a Turkish immigrant in London. A particular challenge in doing that, to direct without having a fully common language?
Well, you have to deal with that. And we had a very, very good voice coach, and I would organise the scene so that it always would be time for her to absorb it. And she is, I say, as an enormously talented woman and a very clever woman, so she was able to pick her way through it.
Explain to us a little bit here the process of making films. Right now we're talking about a film that's about to open in the United States. It's already opened in Britain.
Yes.
I assume you finished work on this film.
Oh, I finished work on this film a year ago. Yes.
So we're forcing you to come here and talk about this thing.
I can just about remember the story. Oh, that's the one where the girl... But you do have to sort of stop and think, oh, is that the one where... And people ask you questions and you're ashamed by how quickly you forget.
And how deeply into the next project are you?
I've made a film in England, a TV film, which I've shot and I'm editing and my brain is full of it.
And you have to now force your brain out of the current project.
Yes, it's not terribly difficult, but it's true. I've started thinking about something else, which is a sort of relief.
And as you're editing this other film, is part of your life devoted to figuring out what you do after that and sorting out
projects? Well, I have to get a job. That's what you mean. I have to not decide. That's too grand a word. I have to find the thing I want to do next. Given that you can't just say, well, I'm going to do that and money will miraculously appear, you have to, you know, sort out the next bit of your life, really, which I'm now about to do.
And given that you've described this dichotomy between truly English films, British films that you do, and American films, is there some alternation either by taste or by the need for money? Or, I mean, do you know that the next film is going to be a more American film?
No, I thought it was going to be an American film, but that collapsed on Friday, so it's a completely blank sheet.
I'm so sorry to hear that, yeah.
So was my bank manager. So was I. You know, you think, well, I wonder what will happen next.
But when a project collapses like that, it's something that you've been, you know, at least mentally deeply involved in for a while?
You know, yes. I mean, the sort of big jump was yet to come, but it was an assumption that I made, which was wrong. What you're really saying is, I wonder if something will come along that will get my imagination going. It's quite hard work making films. Yeah. So you don't do it lightly, and as you get older, you do it even less lightly. So, you know, you just think, oh, I wonder if something will come along that will excite me.
Excite you for a pretty long period of time,
yes,
actually.
Yes, absolutely, which means that it has to be substantial and realistic and, you know, that you can involve other people in and rich people to give you money and all those things.
But have you reached the point at any time so far when you've said, I don't find anything that really excites my curiosity, but I'd better do something, so I'll take this project and make this movie?
Well, in the past I've done that. I think I'm probably secure enough now not to do that. But I can't put my hand on my heart and say that.
But are those projects typically less successful, or is there a moment when you can succeed through craft and make a terrific movie, even though you're...
No, as you get older, you become sort of reliable, so you're of use to people. You know, there's going to be a film there at the end of the day. But it's still to do with, will anything come along that will get me going, get my blood racing?
You've made critical successes and critical failures as well. No one's perfect. Is there some point in the middle of making a film when you know everyone is going to love this, this film's going to be great, or when you say,
you know, when
this
it's
is a dog
not working? Yes.
You know
before anybody else, and you know when something is sort of dazzling because it happens in front of your eyes. You just think, oh, well, this is wonderful. Anybody in their right mind would want to watch this. It's so alive and entertaining.
But even if you look at it and say, this is not working, you still soldier on.
Well, you don't have a choice, do you? You're under contract. And, you know, if you could run away at that point, life would be very, very easy. But you can't, and so you have to go on. But you know that it doesn't come to life in the way that it should. You know, you press a button and nothing happens. And that's when you know that you've made a mistake. I wish I didn't make mistakes, but like everybody else, I do.
You're pretty confident you haven't made one just now with the Dirty Pretty Face.
Oh, no, I think I'm really pleased with it. Whether people will go and see it is a separate matter, but it gave me immense pleasure, and I found it very, very interesting and, you know, just a terrific, terrific bit of my life.
Well, Stephen Frears, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Interminably.
Director Stephen Frears' latest film is called Dirty Pretty Things. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.